Welcome back, everyone. This is the TEFL Training Institute podcast, and I'm Ross Thorburn. And on this week's show, Matt Courtois and I are going to be talking about how to stage lessons with young learners. You'll hear us talking about input and output, which way round to put those, making sure we have enough recycling that goes on from one lesson to the next, how much to improvise and stray from your plan in a class, and finally, how staging can impact student motivation. Enjoy the episode. Right, Matt Courtois, welcome back.
Ross Thorburn, it is my pleasure.
Fantastic. So, today we're talking about lesson staging for young learners. So, why is this an important thing for teachers to think about, like the order that they do activities in their lessons?
Well, I think you're thinking about your objectives for this lesson. You're considering the input that you're providing and then the output from students. And does all of it help them to meet those objectives that you set for your students at the beginning of the lesson? That's also finding that balance of planning your activities and you're planning the objectives and all that plan with the improvising that happens in class. There's not one classroom method that you can take. So I don't think task-based learning is better than PPP or well, I do, but task-based learning is better than PPP. But I mean, like, it's not necessarily more effective than PPP in this teacher's classroom, right? And same with ESA or whatever your methodology is.
There's no one-size-fits-all thing for staging a lesson.
Does that method help them to achieve those goals that we had at the beginning? Because if it doesn't, then it was the wrong method. On a smaller level, like let's look at like an individual activity that you would do in the lesson. So let's say you've taught a few nouns to your students and then you have a game afterwards where they practice using those nouns. Look at the language that students are actually using to complete that game. Were those six nouns that you just taught to them sufficient for them to play the game? Are you covering the language that you need to cover in order for them to do the next activity? And does that activity then help them to jump up onto the next activity?
And how do all of those things relate to the lesson objectives? I feel another way of looking at staging is also through the lens of the materials. And I see a lot of classes where the teachers do an activity and then whatever it is in there kind of never comes back. But I think with this stuff, the Chekhov's gun rule, where it's if a gun appears in the first act, it has to be fired by the third act. Now, Chekhov was obviously talking about plays there, but I think you can also think about this in terms of class. Like if you do a survey with the students and the students say, find out what their classmates' favorite hobbies are, that's the gun. How's the gun going to go off later in the class? How is that information from the survey going to be used later on? Do you then write that up into a little report and present it? Or do you make a poster about one of your classmates' favorite hobbies? And then let's say we've made a poster about one of our classmates' favorite hobbies. What do we do with that poster? Maybe we could stick them on the wall and the names are missing on the posters and we describe one of them and everyone else in the class has to guess who it is. So to me, all these things should link together for the staging and the lesson to really make sense. I think that also leads into student motivation, that students are going to be more motivated to do a survey, for example, if they know in general in this teacher's class, when we do the survey, it leads on to something else rather than I'm just doing the survey for the sake of practicing asking what hobby do you have?
Sure, and in another model lesson, right, like where you have an audio at the beginning, later in the lesson, will it reappear at some point in the third act? Like, if you listen to an audio at the beginning of the lesson, the dialogue at the end is going to mimic that audio from the beginning. And if students all know that and they're aware of that, because that's what happens in their English lessons, there's a lot more motivation to listen to that audio at the beginning. Because by playing them that audio, you're giving them the tools they need to have the conversation later.
But with this, I also wanted to bring up this idea that until now we've been talking about the idea of staging happening within one lesson. But I feel one of the mistakes I think we often make in language teaching is thinking about learning happening over the space of one class. But it really happens over the space between classes. And so for me, a really important thing I think with staging is thinking about the staging between classes almost. So let's say in the previous class, we practiced a particular grammar structure or there was a particular kind of vocabulary, or let's say that was in the previous unit. Well, how is that also going to reappear or be recycled or whatever within this class? And not just seeing these classes as standalone units where learning is going to happen, but instead thinking that actually these students are going to learn over the space of this month or this year or this term, and that whatever they've learned before has to be recycled here for it to actually get into their long-term memories.
A lot of times, those materials that you're working from in the course books, they do that work for you, right? The writers of those course books know what they're covering in lesson one and in book one of a series of, and then right. It recycles that stuff that they've learned before and it reappears. And sometimes you preview a word that's going to appear next month and stuff like that.
So I guess then when you are looking at your materials, that's something to be aware of. If there's a word in there and you think, well, my students don't know this, maybe you need to ask yourself, well, is this in here because it's going to appear in a later unit? Or is it in here because it was in a previous unit or a previous book?
All right, this is a total sidetrack. This might totally be edited out, but it's something, you know, the director, Wes Anderson?
Oh, yeah.
He's famous for really meticulously planning each one of his shots. But early on in his career, his films were much looser in terms of the way the shots were staged and everything like that. But he said early on in his career, he planned out his shots just as meticulously. But then some actor like Bill Murray would come along and do something funny. And he's like, well, I'm going to throw out my plan and do this. Like, why was I planning it that way? And then later he regrets it. He looks back and he's like, it would have been a more beautiful movie if I just did my original plan. That's not to say you shouldn't be improvising in your lessons. So much of what students bring in your lessons, you have to be able to respond to on the spot and stuff like that. But like, I think it takes a lot of planning in order to allow for students that freedom, and then you can keep it on track. Your staging happens with the planning, or Wes Anderson's like, what do you call it, storyboard. That's your staging. You've got wiggle room in there. You have to be really good to know, like, is this activity going to help them later on?
So I really like that idea about how closely are you going to follow the plan. And something that I would tell teachers to avoid doing is when you write a timing on your plan for how long you're going to do an activity for, don't rely on a timer to decide when to finish the activity. And I feel that's a time when it's useful. Walk around the class, listen to what the students are saying, and decide, like, what is the point when the engagement level has peaked and it's starting to go down, or you feel the students have gotten enough practice at whatever they're doing, and then bring the activity to a close.
This one teacher in his first Cert Tessa lesson came in with his lesson plan. I could see there were some issues with his lesson plan. But like, then he went on and did it, and it was a 60-minute lesson. He finished his entire lesson plan in the first 13 minutes.
Oh my God. I feel that's my worst fear.
Oh man, it was painful.
I suffer from this when I do training, this fear that I'm not going to have enough content. And I also see a lot of teachers when they teach classes spend more time doing input, the accuracy-based bit, than the output and the fluency stuff at the end. And I think part of the reason is this fear. Oh my God, what happens if I finish too early and I don't have anything else to do? But I feel the downside to this is, of course, usually we do have enough stuff as teachers or trainers. And the outcome is just the students usually don't get enough practice at doing the fluency work, or the trainees don't get enough time talking about how they're going to apply something because we're worried that we're going to finish early.
And if your objective is students will be able to produce this kind of language, then your purpose of that class is the output.
Absolutely.
So don't spend 90% of the class giving input.
So I think most teachers assume that we have to start the lesson with the input and then do the output, but I don't think that's necessarily the case. In a previous job, I looked into this and watched videos of lessons where the output was either at the beginning or at the end of class, depending on how the lesson was set up. And I found that if you had the output set at the end of the lesson, teachers spent far less time on it. There was far less student output compared to if the output was at the beginning of the lesson. Now, that might sound strange to teachers listening. You might think, well, how could you do output at the beginning of the lesson when the students haven't learned anything? But the students have learned things in previous lessons. So I think another way of looking at it is you do lesson one. Maybe that's mainly or partially input. And then lesson two is mainly output. Or you could look at it as we've got the output at the beginning, which is related to the previous lesson. And then the second half of the class is going to be the input for the next lesson. I found that when that happened, the students ended up speaking a lot more because you don't have to worry about running out of time, right? Because it's the first half of class.
You could almost set up your next lesson. Say, all right, next week, we're going to do this kind of role play to start next week. So here's your homework to prepare for that role play. Prepare for that,
absolutely. And I would guess that that's something that's going to lead to more memorization of language because you're practicing it twice rather than sort of cramming it all together.
I mean, within a single lesson, right, you could start with output. I know one model of task-based learning has students doing the task at the beginning of the lesson and then reflecting on how well they did. And then they listen to your audio or read or watch a video or whatever and then saying, okay, so did these guys do it better than you in the video? And then say, like, what language were they using that helped them to do it better? And then they identify that language. Then they can do that same task again, right? And so that way, you almost have all the input right in the middle where they're reflecting. You're identifying language that they needed in the initial task, and then you set them off to do it again.
I think one of the things that teachers might be worried about with doing that is that just students won't have the grammar or whatever to be able to do those tasks at the beginning. But I think the flip side of it is that I was talking about hobbies earlier. If you did start off the lesson just by asking, what hobbies do you have? You'd obviously get students, they wouldn't know how to say all these hobbies in English. But what you would end up with was a lot of the students talking in their first language about what their actual hobbies are. And I find so often in course books, you end up with these generic hobbies, like, I don't know, snowboarding or something like that, which, like, at least no students I've ever taught actually have as a hobby, right? And if you start off instead with, okay, maybe we can do it in our first language first, right? Well, what are the words that you want to learn? What are the hobbies that you have? Write them in your first language and then we'll translate them.
Well, I think it's the purpose of that initial task is not necessarily to do it perfectly. It's there for students to notice the language that they need. And it gives them a purpose for then listening to your input after that.
They're piquing their interest. Right.
They're identifying their need. You're setting their need for this language. And then once they've done the task and identified what their difficulties are,
then they want
to
listen.
You can fill that in. And that's what the input is then.
I think you mentioned movies earlier. A movie that relates to this, I think, is The Wolf of Wall Street, where at the end of it, he's talking about, sell me this pen. And the typical thing is, oh, this pen's beautiful. It's, you know, it's really, really great. And someone flips it around and says,
sell me that pen. Watch. Go on.
This pen.
Thank you.
Why don't you do me a favor? Why don't you name down that napkin for me?
I don't have a pen.
Exactly. Supply and demand, my friend.
Right. And I feel that's the thing that you want to create with students with language is not, I'm going to teach you these 10 words. Well, I don't want to learn these 10 words. But if it's like, do you want to be able to talk to your friends about what your hobbies are? Sure, I do. Okay, now you've got a reason to listen to me telling you how to say these hobbies in English.
As long as we're doing the movie thing. If you're telling a murder mystery or a crime story and you tell them immediately, this is the murderer and here's how it's happened, there's no motivation to read it, right? And so, like, you can pose problems for people and have them thinking about it and wanting to know the answer, and then you reveal it. If you can use your staging structure to build up curiosity, don't give them all the answers beforehand. You give them a reason to listen for that language.
Daniel Willingham, in his book, Why Don't Students Like School, says something like this, that it's the question that gets students interested, not the answer. And I feel that as teachers, we often start off our lessons with, here's the answer. Here's how to say this thing in English. Mm-hmm. But first of all, we need to start off with the question of, yeah, make a diagram of you and your friends' hobbies. Which ones are the same? Which ones are different? Now you have a need to ask the teacher, oh, how do I say these things? Or look up the course book or whatever.
That's staging, isn't it? Like, absolutely. That's all staging is. Staging is curiosity or getting your students interested in your input somehow and then changing that into output. View your lesson as a story and how can you tell that in the most engaging, memorable, cohesive, structured way?
One more time, everyone, that was Matt Courtois. For more episodes with Matt, go to our website, www.tefltraininginstitute.com. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you again next time. Goodbye.